Hello and welcome to Quilachievious Markets Uncut podcast, your weekly insight into the topics and issues that we have been discussing here at Quilachievious. I'm Andrew Cartwright, investment manager based out of our Birmingham office, and I'm delighted to be joined by regular market commentator and head of fixed interest Richard Carter and investment manager Harry Gibbon from our sustainable investments team in what will be our final podcast of the year. So welcome Richard and Harry. So as 2024 draws to a close and we look forward to the festive period, the break provides a good time to pause and reflect on what has happened over the year before we turn our attention to 2025 and what that might bring for investors. But before doing so, Richard, I just wanted to touch upon the events of last week, where once again the news headlines were dominated by geopolitical events. We heard Trump threatening to impose tariffs on emerging market countries if they attempt to replace the US dollar as the world's reserve currency. And whilst that might just well be a social media shot across the bows, over the course of the weekend, we also had the collapse of President Assad's regime in Syria. But perhaps of greater concern, and certainly much closer to home, is the political crisis that has arisen in France, which continued to escalate last week. So, Richard, you might well have some thoughts on those other events or picked up on other economic news. But to start with, we do seem to be experiencing increasing political instability in Europe. And first of all, we had Germany and the recent collapse of the ruling coalition, and now France. And this does seem somewhat concerning, given that they are two key members of the European Union. Now, you touched upon the situation in France with Chris Scott in last week's podcast, but in case anyone missed it, could you bring us up to date with what has been happening there and how the situation has developed since then?
Yeah, Andy, the whole situation in France is a bit of a mess. Unfortunately, obviously, the background to this is that, you know, Macron a few months ago called elections in the hope of breaking a political deadlock, and in fact, you know, made the situation worse because the government didn't have enough votes in Parliament to pass the budget, next year's budget, which had to be agreed before the end of the year. So instead of passing it with a majority vote, they had to use kind of emergency powers to do it. And the opposition, sort of including Le Pen's party, had threatened to use a vote of no confidence to bring the government down if they did that. So and they were they were true to their word. As soon as the government passed the budget through Parliament, the opposition swung into action and tabled a vote of no confidence, and the government lost it. So that was curtains for them. That was curtains for Barnier's very short stint as French Prime Minister, and he said he's not going to do the job again by the sounds of it. So it is a mess. Macron's now basically faced with the task of starting again and finding another Prime Minister, and then they'll just have to try and pass a renegotiated budget through Parliament. So it is a very difficult situation. Markets, I'd say, have been fairly sanguine about it. I mean, you've seen, French government bond spreads to Germany. That's one of the key metrics that people look at. They've widened, but nothing dramatic, nothing like, Eurozone crisis Mark II or anything like that. French assets have been a bit weak, Euro's been a bit weak, but it hasn't been a panic. And the good news is that the French government, sort of acting government, can use special powers to kind of keep the lights on in France and sort of live from one month to the next until they can actually pass the budget. So it's okay. But you're right. It's part of a wider political kind of, problems in Europe. I think the bigger risk going forward is what happens when, if Macron were to step down and you potentially would worry about, an extremist or far left, far right president potentially taking power. But that's not a worry for the moment, and hopefully that won't come to pass.
Thank you, Richard. So, and as well as all the political events that have been going on, just looking ahead, we've got some key macroeconomic events coming up. And notably, we've got another round of central bank meetings to set interest rates. And in the UK, we are sort of anticipating some degree of a rate cut, and potentially in the US as well. So, Richard, what do you think we can expect from those forthcoming meetings? And in addition to any sort of political developments that might arise, is there any other sort of macroeconomic news that you'll be specifically watching out for in the run-up to the end of the year?
Yeah, there's not too much left, touch wood, before now and the end of the year. I mean, the main thing really coming up this week is US inflation numbers. Provided they're okay and no great shock, I think we can look forward to one more Federal Reserve interest rate cut next week, 25 basis points. So that would be pretty welcome. And we should also, I think, expect a 25 basis point cut from the ECB this week as well. Definitely Europe's in a situation where it needs lower interest rates. You know, inflation is pretty much under control. So that looks like it's going to happen. Bank of England does have a meeting before the end of the year, but I think they won't be making any changes at that. We'll probably have to wait till February for their next rate cut. But I think, all in all, it's, central banks are in a sort of okay situation at the moment. Inflation easing off a bit, they can cut rates. But going forward and into 2025, the whole situation is obviously a lot more uncertain with what Trump will mean, particularly as far as US inflation is concerned.
So just looking back over the course of 2024, it's been a fascinating year and one that makes our jobs so interesting. We've had numerous general elections across the world, including here in the UK and more recently Trump being re-elected in the US. We've seen inflation fall significantly throughout the year and back towards central bank targets. And with that, we finally had some initial and eagerly anticipated interest rate cuts across Europe, in the UK and the US. And from an investment perspective, it's been another very good year for US equities, with again technology stocks leading the way. Gold has also performed strongly, and we've also had fairly decent returns from the UK equity market. On the flip side, we perhaps haven't seen the recovery in bond markets and other interest rate sensitive assets that we might have hoped for, as expectations for rate cuts were pushed further and further out during the course of the year. And despite talks of stimulus packages, it also proved another challenging year for China. So, Richard, it had been a very eventful year, and I've touched briefly upon some of those. But what were the highlights or lowlights for you? And as we look forward to 2025, and you already mentioned last week that the US equity market could well continue to make further progress. But are there any other sort of geographical regions or asset classes that you think might be of particular interest or concern as we progress through 2025?
So I think highlight for this year is, you just alluded to it, we went, you cast our minds back to the start of the year, everyone was worrying about elections and politics and all the rest of it, and we've whatever people's political persuasion, we've kind of sailed through those, and markets keep going up, and companies keep making money, and the US economy keeps doing well. That seems to be a fairly familiar topic. Maybe some other places doing less well, but certainly we've overcome that. You know, we've climbed the wall of worry, as they say, and returns have been pretty good. I think low lights are just, worry, The geopolitical situation is a bit of a mess. Tension seems to rise in all, particularly sort of Ukraine and also Middle East. And although it hasn't upset markets, it's still something that is of great concern, I think, as we go into 2025, as ever, really. I mean, in terms of next year, US markets have had a brilliant year this year. They did very well the previous year. So whether they'll make it third time lucky, or 3 years in a row, we'll have to wait and see. Possibly, because if Trump's policies are pretty pro-US growth, so you could imagine US markets doing reasonably well again. I think China's going to be one to watch next year. It's going to be fascinating to see how the markets over there do. Chinese government really is on message now with more stimulus, lower interest rates, help for the housing market and all the rest of it. But then you've got this interesting dynamic with Trump and potential tariffs, the geopolitical tensions over Taiwan and all the rest of it. So that's going to be a fascinating one to watch. I think you're right. Bonds haven't done brilliantly this year. Some parts of the market, if you've been in shorter dated kind of corporate bonds, things like that, they've done okay, albeit miles behind what the US stock market's done. But I think partly that was due sticky inflation, but also quite strong growth, which is not such a bad thing at all, really. Hopefully returns next year should be okay, but a lot will depend on what Trump means for inflation.
Thank you, Richard. So much, if not most, of our attention over the past few months has focused on the UK budget and the US election and the 29th United Nations Climate Change Conference, or COP29, which was held in Azerbaijan at the end of November, may very well have gone unnoticed by many. So to put it back on the agenda, I'm delighted to welcome back Harry Gibbon from our Sustainable Investments team, and they're responsible for managing the Quota Achieve It Climate Assets Funds. And those of you who are not yet familiar with the Climate Assets Funds, they are thematic multi-asset portfolios which invest in companies providing solutions to the economic and environmental challenges of climate change. And the Climate Assets Balance Fund had a track record spanning over a decade. And just over 2 years ago, the Climate Assets Growth Fund was launched. Now, Harry, when we spoke last, and it seems hard to believe that it was actually a couple of years ago, the war in Ukraine had sent energy prices soaring and highlighted that the world is still very reliant on fossil fuels and from countries we were not necessarily due to rely on. And since then, the oil price has come down noticeably, but it has been a difficult few years dealing with the consequences of an inflation shock and resulting high interest rates. Now, we do seem to be through the worst of that, but you know, given all that has gone on in recent years, it's perhaps easy to see why climate change may well not have been at the top of the political agenda with the developed nations, let alone developing countries, where demand for oil is still increasing and there are clearly conflicting agendas. We've also had Trump being re-elected as US president, and I think it's fair to say that he's not considered to be particularly sympathetic to the climate change cause and has already talked about the US increasing oil production. So it seems to me, at least, that the economic and political climate over the past few years just hasn't been that conducive for multilateral climate agreements. And I'm struggling to see how that might sort of change in the foreseeable future, given recent events. So, Harry, could you first of all give us an overview of the key points and agreements that came out of COP29? Now, am I right to be reticent on the prospects for any sort of meaningful change or progress? And secondly, from an investment perspective, could you give us an update on the climate assets funds? Have those recent events, including Trump's re-election, had an impact on the investment themes or influenced current portfolio positioning in any meaningful way?
Of course, and thanks again for having me on, Andy. So if we start with COP29, it's a difficult one. It's the expectation of every COP that there's going to be some sort of silver bullet and climate change is going to be solved as soon as all the countries return home. But that really can't be the case. That's a very tall order and we've got to get there slowly. So what came out of this one in Azerbaijan, as you say, was that it was the advanced economy's commitment to finance developing countries has tripled. So the original target was to reach $100 billion per year, and that's been tripled to $300 billion. So quite the commitment. However, I think the reason why there's a bit of question mark as to whether that is quite a large commitment is because the developing nations who are receiving these grants and loans were expecting $500 billion a year by 2035. The target that's being mooted is actually over a trillion, about $1.4 trillion a year by 2035 if we really were to solve climate change. And that's just quite a very difficult number to get to. So that's why I think there's a bit of negativity around this year's COP. I think there's also a little bit of a question mark about COP and how the hosting nations come to pass, because this is now the third year that the COP has been hosted by an oil producing nation, and the last 3 years Egypt, Azerbaijan and UAE are all authoritarian states as well, so it's there's some question marks about how they're chosen, and then you add on top of that, well, last year Saudi Arabia's agenda was leaked, where they had two columns, one with the with their renewables company and one with their state oil company, and they were effectively going around to the various countries having a bit of help for the renewables company and a lot of help for the oils company. Azerbaijan this year, their prime minister came out and said that oil is like liquid gold. So it's a bit odd to be hosting climate talks in these sorts of states where oil is still very much in the forefront of their economy. So that that's why I think there's a bit of negativity around the COP. But I think $300 billion a year by 2035 is really strong. It's certainly a step in the right direction, which is what all these COPs seem to be. And that's all we can really ask for. There's no, you know, climate change is getting very, very expensive. I read recently that insurance losses from natural catastrophes were over about $140 billion this year, which is a huge number. And most of that's in the United States. So there's a lot of work to do. There's a lot of money that needs spending. And I don't think any of these countries can turn around and say that they can solve it and fund it within the next few years. So we look forward to COP30 in Brazil, the largest oil producer in South America. So we'll see what comes out of that. But you can we really hope that the climate agenda keeps being pushed. And although oil demand is still there, it will always be there. It's needed for a lot of things other than transport. We are bringing on a lot of renewable capacity globally every year. And that's soon overtaking conventional oil and gas investment. So I think it's going to be a long journey, but we're certainly going to get there. And supporting these themes and this structural trend is a good place to be in our view. If we switch over to Trump, this is a sort of how long have you got sort of question, but his win has certainly put a bit of a cloud over renewables, unfortunately. If you looked at the solar companies in the US that became quite popular in 2021, they've struggled a lot since, but they were all down about 20% when it was looking like Trump was going to win the White House. And then on the other side, you had Tesla soaring about 20% because of Elon Musk's relationship with Donald Trump. So a lot kind of went on the day, and I think a lot of it still hangs over. And it will do, to be honest, until he comes in January, and maybe you give him a few months to iron out his policies, because he's someone that really does stimulate a crowd and likes to tell people what they hear. So a lot of the debate at the moment has been about the Inflation Reduction Act, or the IRA, and Trump's committed to abolishing it all, but that's not our view. I was talking to one of our investee companies a few weeks ago called EDPR. They're a renewables developer in Europe, and they have a large US part of their business as part of their growth plans. And they have a lobbying center there where they talk to a lot of Republican senators as well as Democrat senators. And the Republican senators don't want to get rid of the IRA. A lot of the investment that has come from the IRA has gone to Republican states, because it can include manufacturing support. EDPR were telling us that they've been building onshore wind farms in Republican states, which is something that, to be honest, surprised me quite a bit. So I don't really think that's going to be going away. I think it'll be changed, and a few bits of it will be dropped. Namely, offshore wind is in danger. A lot of the unprofitable technologies like hydrogen and carbon capture, they're probably on the chopping block. But I don't think the landscape, once Trump has announced his policies, will be as bad as the market thinks. You never know. Elon Musk might convince him that electric vehicles are the way to go. But if you look at Trump's other policies, a lot of the inflationary aspects that Richard was alluding to earlier on will affect a lot of strategies, not just strategies like ours. You know, corporate tax rates dropping to 15% would help all US companies, including ours. And then his inflationary policies will hurt a lot of strategies, probably including ours. But it's been a bit of a bumpy ride up until this point, with, like you say, the last time I came on as your guest, Andy, it was 2022. Russia was in the early stages of invading Ukraine. And then we had interest rate rises that hurt our strategies in 2023, and then the real rise of the Magnificent Seven throughout 23 and 24 that has impacted relative performance slightly. So we're looking forward to next year when we're seeing interest rates come down. Admittedly, not as fast as we had hoped before the UK budget and Trump's win, but interest rates are still coming down, which helps an interest rate sensitive strategy like ours. We're looking for a bit more clarity on the IRA, which we're expecting a bit of an upside. So I think we're relatively positive going into the new year.
Thank you, Harry. And interesting to note your comment there about holding COP29 in Azerbaijan and other oil producing countries. And perhaps this is the sort of UN's attempt just to bring it home quite literally to some of the oil producing companies, countries, that they are part of the problem and the solution, and just raising awareness in those countries. So Harry, whilst climate change may well have slipped down the political agenda for many countries, here at Could Achieve It, we have continued to enhance our capabilities to support responsible investing. And I think most people will be familiar with the terms environmental, social, and governance, or ESG. And we've certainly continued to see an increase in appetite for sustainability-focused investments from clients. I mean, could you give us an overview of some of those recent developments here at Could Achieve It?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's always important to start with separating out ESG and sustainable investing. So ESG is how a company does what it does, and sustainable is what a company does. So you take EDPR, our renewables development company. They're building wind farms and solar farms. So what the company does is we consider to be sustainable, building out the renewables capacity around the developing nations. And then how EDPR does what it does is the ESG side. So it's sort of composition of the board, it's treatment of workers, it's water usage, if that were to be a pertinent factor to focus on for a utility company. So the ESG side is done by our responsible investment team. So they focus on our alignment with regulation. They are doing company meetings. They're engaging with companies that fall down in various areas. They are voting at company meetings. And then our team do the sustainability analysis. So the developments that have gone on this year in our space is pretty much one main focus has been SDR. So that is the regulation of sustainable companies. And that came out at the end of last year, and funds that had sustainable attributes needed to be aligned to the regulation by the 2nd of December this year, which are called the naming and marketing rules, which we are aligned to, which is good. And that's been our big focus of the year. I think also the various bits that we've been talking about, drivers of performance have changed investor interest, I will say. I think we still see a lot of demand from clients, because investing sustainably is not only taking advantage of, a structurally growing area of the global economy, but it's also, it has that feel good factor. So it's close to a lot of investors' hearts, and a lot of our clients are very happy investing sustainably, and are happy weathering the storms that we've seen over the last year. Some of our more relaxed clients have been invested for longer, but the clients who have been invested for a shorter time period need a little bit more contact and reassuring. But we're really positive on the strategy. The regulatory landscape is changing to help funds like ours, which are doing what they say on the tin and not any greenwashing or anything like that. And I think investor interest is only going to increase over the medium to long term.
Harry, thank you very much for your insights today and for joining us on the podcast. And also to Richard, not just for today, but your contribution throughout the year. It's been a very welcome. So before we draw to a close, if any listeners have any questions that they would like to ask one of our analysts for a future podcast, you can put your questions forward to our team of experts by submitting them via the weekly comments page on our website. We'd love to hear from you. To stay up to date with our thoughts on markets and current issues, please visit our website at www.quotachieveit.com. Here you can also see more of what we've been doing here at QuotaChieveIt, as well as signing up for upcoming events. You can also watch past webinars on demand and subscribe to our weekly comment newsletter. We'll be back again in the new year. And in the meantime, for those of you on social media, you'll be able to see up-to-date content on our Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn pages. So thanks again to our Head of Fixed Interest, Richard Carter, and Harry Gibbon from our Climate Assets team, and to you all for listening.